Next item, 153.
Amend timeline for placard requirement and tenant notification for unreinforced masonry buildings and required documentation of compliance.
Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you very much, Mayor.
Thank you so much. One of the things that I have heard over and over and over again in the 3 weeks that I've been on the Portland City Council has been the issue of unreinforced masonry buildings. I've heard from just about every corner of the city of Portland on this issue. I can assure you, however, that no one has told me that they want their building to be unsafe. However, many people have told me they cannot afford the retrofits that would make it safe in an earthquake. An earthquake would be a terrible way to lose your home or business. No one wants that. But many Portlanders are also worried that they will be displaced by economic forces long before the earthquake hits. That's why I am looking forward to the work of a new committee focused on developing realistic financial supports for URM owners who need them most. Applications for the committee are open now and on the city website. And this is a committee that the Bureau of Emergency Management is putting in place that will be reviewing the retrofit requirements, and you'll hear a bit more about that. In the meantime, my goal is to slow down the enforcement of the placards rules. Many building owners are clearly fearful about this requirement. It is the city's responsibility to ensure people understand the rules and the reasons for them. I don't believe we need to record the URM issue on the title as well, which seems to be a big barrier for some individuals who have that requirement. In the process that was taking leading up to this URM ordinance being passed, it is my belief that we didn't earn the trust of the people that were required to actually do these upgrades. We didn't provide enough information early enough to ensure that people thought that this was a joint effort rather than something that was being shoved down their throat. It is my belief that we can do better by notifying both potential renters when they're considering a move, as well as instead of when they are already signing the lease. I think it's important that we be proactive, but again, that we take the time to put the right pieces in place at the right time. I want to thank Commissioner Udaly, who suggested that we work with her to continue to figure out how we protect renters. At the same time, we're delaying the implementation of this ordinance. I know that the Bureau of Emergency Management is committed to serving Portlanders most at risk of displacement from an earthquake, but also at risk from other factors. And although URMs are a topic council has discussed before, the Portland Bureau of Emergency Management will keep working and taking the time to bring back recommendations that are developed in an inclusive way. Process matters, and earning trust in the community is also essential in any effort to build a resilient Portland and a resilient community. In the meantime, I have asked the Portland Bureau of Emergency Management to bring forward today's ordinance, which gives us more time to do that work. Mayor, Commissioner, I have invited Jonna and Derek to provide additional information.
I have a brief opening statement, too.
Very well.
If I could.
Yes, please.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty, for bringing this ordinance forward. In November of 2019... of 2018.
Not yet.
In November of 2018, I did not vote for the placarding mandate, the ordinance establishing the placarding mandate. I believe then, as I believe today, that we put the proverbial cart before the horse. No one in this debate takes the threat of an earthquake lightly, and I appreciate the comments of Commissioner Hardesty in that regard. However, our current mandate risks leading to significant demolition of historic buildings and significant inequity, changing the very character of our city. It also places undue burdens on older adults, small businesses, arts organizations, music venues, churches, and mom-and-pop landlords. I support the changes being proposed today, extending the placarding requirement to November of 2020, requiring notice to tenants in a rental application, and eliminating the lien requirement. I think that we will all benefit from a reset and the additional time to get it right. Thank you very much.
Mayor, if we may, a testimony, you're ready for?
Yeah, of course.
Good morning, and thank you, commissioners. For the record, my name is Jonna Papa-Iftimiu, and I work at the Bureau of Emergency Management as the Planning Policy and Community Programs Manager. I'd like to just walk you through the changes that are proposed at this time as simply as possible. So to begin with the current code, which was adopted in November of 2018, it requires for-profit URM building owners to post a warning sign and to notify their tenants that a building is a URM by March 1st of this year. That's coming up soon. And then it gives nonprofits until November 1st of 2020. And the language that they have to post and notify is the box text. The first proposed change.
Jonna, can you go back to the placard? Is this the actual?
Yes, that's copies and pasted from the ordinance.
On the placard.
That's the language on the placard.
So unreinforced masonry buildings may be unsafe in the event of a major earthquake.
That's exactly the
text.
That's
what this is all about.
Yes.
Got it. Thank you.
That's just one piece of what this is all about.
All right. Well, we'll get to the rest.
So the first change is to the timeline to post the placard. It would extend the timeline for for-profit building owners to match up with nonprofit building owners. So everyone would have until November 1st, 2020 to post the warning sign. This is after the new URM work group that Commissioner Hardesty mentioned will have had time to meet and develop their recommendations. So this requirement would then come in the context of the next steps that they've proposed.
Jonna, can I ask you a question about that? Is the intention here then to change the wording on the placard? What is the intention of the work group? What's the point?
The point of the work group is to develop, it's to review the work of our three previous work groups and to come up with some recommendations that would provide greater financial support, in particular for URM building owners that would otherwise probably struggle to make the retrofits. So it's really focused on the financial piece.
So it's not focused on the placarding. It's focused on any seismic requirements or potential incentives to help pave the way for that.
It is focused on that, but a part of the commitment that the Bureau has also made is that we're hiring an independent third-party facilitator, and the work group will, in many senses, also direct their own work.
So is it a possibility that what we're really doing here is we're going to eliminate the placarding requirement?
I think that's a decision for council.
I'm just curious. Is that where we're headed? What's your recommendation?
I think that I'm eager to see an independent advisory group that's inclusive, and I want to hold our Bureau open to whatever their recommendations are. And their charter says they'll make those recommendations directly to council. So ultimately, we'll absolutely be up to council.
Thank you.
So can I just jump in here for a sec? The way I read this ordinance is we are postponing the effective date of the placarding to November of 2020. So that's specifically what the ordinance does.
Yes.
Currently, the legislature is taking up proposals to create financial incentives for owners to do the retrofitting work in the nature of grants and loans. The city is also reviewing whether it has certain financial incentives. So as someone who supports this approach, I think all the options are on the table. We are effectively postponing the date in which a placard has to go up. But between now and November 2020, we're giving ourselves the opportunity to find out if there are financial incentives which mitigate the impact to a property owner, particularly the smaller property owners. And by the way, I don't want to lose track of the benefit, in my judgment, of postponing the lien requirement. Now, we can argue about whether it's a lien, and different people have different views on this. I went to a highly respected developer who does historic preservation work, John Russell, and I said, what is the effect of this recording requirement? He said it effectively works like a lien, and it has the unintended consequence of making it harder to get financing for the work that he needs to do on his historic properties. So it seems to me, under the circumstances, it's wise to revisit that as well.
Thank you, Commissioner. And Mr. Mayor, I would just say that I do not expect staff to now have a recommendation, since what we're doing is hitting a pause button so that we can hear from many more of the constituents who've been impacted and who didn't feel like their voice was actually included in the resolution. And so I would be very disappointed if my staff came in and had a recommendation about what the outcome of talking to people through this community process will be before we start that process.
Okay, I'm just trying to put the pieces together here. This isn't a new process. This started years before I got here, and we've been batting it around ever since.
So, Mr. Mayor,
if
you wouldn't mind to allow her to do her presentation, and then we'd be happy to engage in conversation, because I just feel like
I'd like to ask her questions as part of the presentation.
Oh, well,
I have a right to do that.
You do have a right to do that, but I was just hoping that you would allow her to complete her thought before then.
Okay, I'll let you complete your testimony, but I would like to ask some questions.
Please. Absolutely. So, fortunately, the presentation is brief. In addition to the changes to the timeline to post the placard, it also changes the notification requirement for tenants. Previously, it required building owners to notify renters when they signed the lease. It was part of the lease agreement. And now it requires owners to notify prospective tenants when they complete a rental application. So presumably, they get the information earlier on when they're still just in the application process and they may be considering other choices. We would have liked to keep the compliance date on this tight, because people are making decisions every month about where to live, but we need some time to inform building owners about this requirement, and so it sets a date of June 1st of this year. And then the other change is about documentation of compliance. Currently, as Commissioner Fish mentioned, it requires building owners to record on the property title at the Multnomah County Recorder's Office the requirement to retain the placard, keep up the sign, and continue to tell future tenants about the building's URM status. And that informs and binds future owners. And the change would eliminate the requirement to put the URM sign and notification requirements on the title at the county. And instead, it would require the owners to acknowledge their obligation in writing directly to the Bureau of Development Services. And those are the extent of the changes.
Very good. I have just a couple of questions. First of all, some people might be surprised. I actually support removing the requirement to record on the title. I think it has created way too much confusion. And probably that's what I'm hearing about more than anything else from building owners, is the concern that this appears to be a lien. It is, of course, the position of both the city's legal counsel and, at least it has historically been, the position of the Bureau of Emergency Management that is, in fact, not a lien. But that being as it may, we report to the public and the public is concerned about it. I personally don't see any material reason why we could not remove that requirement. So I just want to be clear I support that. I do have a question about notification. So my understanding is if I heard you correctly, the notification now would be in the application process for renters. Is that correct?
That's right.
How do we know they saw the notification? Will they be required to acknowledge that notification?
That's a good question. I think that that would be sensible. That would likely be covered in the administrative rules that are written after the ordinance is adopted.
Because we do that now, right? With asbestos and lead paint, renters are actually required to sign an acknowledgement,
yes,
so that we know that the landlord actually gave them that information. Is that correct?
That's, to my knowledge, yes.
Okay. And we also, it's my understanding that this does not apply to current renters?
It doesn't. In the ordinance that was passed back in November, it did require the notification of tenants. However, the requirement was just the owner of a building subject to the code must notify existing tenants that the building is an unreinforced masonry building. It didn't say that it had to be in writing, so a verbal notification would have sufficed. When we went back to do the updates, we realized we didn't have a good way to enforce this or document compliance, and so we felt like we would be most effective by focusing on going forward and that everyone eventually signs the lease or re-signs the lease so they'd be informed.
Got it. Thank you.
May I?
Yeah, please. Commissioner Hardesty.
Doug Bradley is from my office, and I want to make sure if you want to add any additional testimony, you have the opportunity to do so.
Is this his first testimony?
This is his very first testimony.
Ah.
So we'll dispense with the normal hazing.
We welcome him. For his presentation.
Thank you. Be nice to him. He's a good dude.
Mayor Wheeler, members of council, my name is Derek Bradley, and I am Commissioner Hardesty's policy director. This is my first time providing testimony before this body, but I have been fortunate enough to provide testimony down in Salem before. So if hazing is the norm, then that's okay. I want to thank the mayor for his questions, and I think that it's important to note that a lot of work has been going on already about some of the issues that I think you brought up, including notifying people in URMs and how to best address that issue. There are conversations about finding new mechanisms for enforcement on notification outside of title changes, or just a sort of vague requirement. There were discussions about the city ultimately taking up the burden to notify these tenants, and these are discussions that are ongoing and that we hope to have an opportunity to really flesh out and bring to council a more fleshed out method of notifying tenants than what was just read. Unfortunately, the timeline of this of what we're trying to get, it was before council now, was this needed to be first read today, second read in a week before to get it done before March 1st. I want to just commend both the Bureau of Emergency Management and Bureau of Developmental Services for putting in a lot of time with us coming into office just in January and alerting them that there were concerns within the community. We had questions, and everyone's been willing to work with us on this, and that's been very much appreciated. If you have any other questions for us, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you so much. I do have one question for you, and the question is, and so has our office made any decision about what the long-term ordinance should be at this point?
I think the only long-term decision we've come to is a real desire to find ways to fund these meaningful, important updates to structures. I think if you look at California as a great example, you can see a statewide requirement where some local jurisdictions provided funding options and some did not. The jurisdictions that had, and there were a variety of funding mechanisms used, the jurisdictions that provided funding mechanisms saw a drastically lower rate of demolition of their historic buildings than jurisdictions that did not provide that funding. A great example, I would encourage you to look at San Diego versus San Francisco if you're interested in some of those numbers. And we've heard a lot from communities members throughout that there is real concern that a lot of historical places and well-loved places in the city will be destroyed if what we have before in the books now is just kept unchanged.
I have a question for Jonna, if I could. There was a piece in the Tribune yesterday about Jim Kelly and the building that he owns that was formerly Rejuvenation Hardware. Mm-hmm. And I learned something from that piece that he retained the ownership in the building while he sold his business. Mr. Kelly felt aggrieved because he had made what was at the time the required upgrades to his building, had invested a substantial amount of money, and now has been told that it's inadequate. As you take up this, well, assuming this ordinance passes, and it is, it's regrettable that two of our colleagues couldn't be here today, but I'm betting this is going to pass. So assuming this passes, I would be interested in better understanding why people like Mr. Kelly are not grandfathered in if they did the work in good faith at a point in the past, or what's the compelling public policy reason not to do so. In addition, we can pick different cities that are either models to follow, emulate, or to avoid in terms of this debate. It seems to me the city that is most relevant to us in terms of having the difficulty of finding the common ground is really Seattle. Yeah. So at some point, I'd be interested in learning more about what Seattle is considering and what we can learn from their experience. But at the end of the day, it's my belief that we have to have a suite of incentives that we can offer, particularly the smaller landlords, in order to make this this transition economically viable. And if we don't, we're essentially just consigning a lot of historic buildings to demolition, which I don't think is the community sentiment. So thank you for both.
Thank you.
Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you. I just wanted to put on the record that the bill in Salem acknowledges that there are 10,000 of these URM buildings around the state. Only 1,600 of them are in the city of Portland. And so in context, every main street in Oregon has these buildings on it. And so we want to really take the time to make sure that it's not just about mandates, but it's really about how do you work cooperatively with a community to actually get the outcomes that you're looking for. And so thank you both. And that concludes our invited testimony, I believe.
Great. Sort of two comments more than questions. And thank you for an excellent presentation. First of all, the bill is House Bill 2208, mm-hmm. and it's being introduced by Representative Paul Evans. I was down there on Monday, and I can tell you that the city of Portland is pushing this bill very, very hard. As Commissioner Hardesty just correctly pointed out, this is not just a Portland issue. This is about the entirety of the community. What makes this issue so thorny is that it is pitting an actual threat, a life safety threat, against other really important values in this community: historic preservation, the arts community, music venues. We've heard from our pastors in the Black community about the significance of this to their parishes, to their communities. And we have to figure out where is this right balance between acknowledging the importance of those values in our community, but understanding what has changed in recent years is the identification of an actual threat to life and safety. We didn't know when these buildings were built. We didn't even know 25 years ago that we were in a seismic zone and that these buildings provided a potentially more substantial risk. So that's what we're dealing with here, right? So that's thing number one. Thing number two, on House Bill 2208, this community has galvanized around this particular issue. I've certainly heard the community. I think I can safely say, just as Commissioner Fish said, the ordinance is going to pass, I can pretty safely say that's true. But what I cannot accept as a landing point for this is doing nothing. That cannot be the option. We cannot simply walk away from this and say, phew, the ordinance is dead. Now we really don't have to do anything serious. At some point, we have to talk about seismic codes. We have to talk about securing these facilities. And I'm not saying today, I'm not saying tomorrow, but can we do it over 30 years, 40 years, even 50 years? Can we not lay that foundation to actually ensure that these buildings aren't just here for today, but they're here for future generations to enjoy as well, and understanding that there is a much broader and true risk to URMs in a seismic zone? So that's sort of the commercial. Last but not least, House Bill 2208, please do call your legislature. People who are so motivated to write, to call, to show up, to demonstrate on this issue, this is when we really, really need you to focus that energy down in Salem in support of House Bill 2208. Thank you. That was a little bit of a shameless plug, but there it is.
Thank you.
Carla, how many people?
20.
How many, I'm sorry?
20.
Very good. And the time... try to keep it within 2 minutes, but we'll be fairly liberal about it. This is our last substantive item for the morning. Okay. Name for the record, please.
The first three are Charles Bridgecrane Johnson, Roger C. Jones, and Walt McMoneys. They'll be followed by Lightning Superhumanity, Angie Even, and Maggie.
Good morning.
Good morning, Commissioners. For the record, Charles Bridgecrane Johnson. And I think I want to thank again Joanne for emphasizing that as we, when we have a public participation process, it's very important that members of the public don't feel it's a dog and pony show towards a foregone conclusion. So it'll be interesting to see when we bring this back. I want to thank the mayor for opening up the window for timelines, for ultimate completion. Perhaps the timelines can be graded based on the economic capacity of the property owner. I think that, I know even people who've gotten significant amount of press based on maybe their legal position on this, McMenamins with Crystal Ballroom and stuff like that, would agree that they are better situated to be under a more structured, shorter time frame than some other owners, especially in areas of the where people are holding on. Traditional minority owners holding on in neighbors that have hoods that have been gentrified. I think one reason you should consider that this has maybe become a bigger hullabaloo than anyone expected is while we're talking about large scale risks to safety, it's like a placard is normally considered ridiculously intrusive in some contexts. In Oregon, a state with about 29,000 people who've been registered for various so-called sex-related offenses, only the most serious predators are even listed on the website. So out of those 29,000, only a few are listed on the website. And we would never get a majority agreeing that, yeah, if I live in an apartment with a convicted predatory rapist, that we have to have a placard for safety. So I do believe that we need to empower consumers to make informed decisions. But we already have at least two splotches on the PortlandOregon.gov website that specifically talked about URM. Placarding, whether it stays or goes, is a decision that will maybe come out of this workshop. But there's also central registries and notification through that way. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Roger Jones, and I'll be speaking today for the Hawthorne Boulevard Business Association, which is a one of our historic districts, or we'd like to be a historic district in Portland, but it's a well-known location and has 42 targets on the back of its historic buildings. This target is whether it's going to be effective today or whether it's going to be effective in November of 2020. The placarding issue will basically create a stigmata for that, for our district and any district in the city. So while I speak specifically for our property owners that are affected directly by this, I would like to also focus on what this ordinance does or could do if it were not taken away, if it were not fully
repealed.
Thank you. The full repeal would solidify about 7,000 housing units, affordable housing units. It would give us a reprieve for that element. It would also give our committee, which is going to be formed, a chance to breathe. Right now, an 18-month delay to the inevitable, which says this is a URM. If you say that, if you force the people to say that about their building, they can't verify it any better than the Bureau of Development Services can verify. The list is unverified. If there's 10,000 URMs in Oregon, which I just heard, a lot of those are actually in residential areas. What's undisclosed or should be disclosed more discreetly or more popularly is that 25 years ago, we selected commercial districts to look at to see if they're URMs. In 1993, 95, oh my gosh, I'm sorry.
Do you want to finish your last thought?
Yeah, I do, really. In 1993 and in 1995, we supposedly had a list of URMs. That list was basically the main streets and the commercial districts and the central business district of Portland. There are thousands of other URMs in our city that will be affected by this. So please, what I'm asking for is a complete repeal and a start over so that the committee can work unfettered for a year and come back and give you a good policy a year from now.
Thank you. Good morning.
Morning. Walt McMonies. I'm associated with MBU, Masonry Building Owners of Oregon. And I own three buildings that the city has said are URMs. One of them is this one, which is the Trinity Place Apartments. And it's my baby. You know, it's a 1911 building that's got some beautiful interiors, and it's, you know, It's basically a wonderful building, but we spent $1.1 million upgrading this building, and we don't pass muster at this point with the building BDS. And they said, "Well, you've done a great job, but you haven't quite made it." And my problem is, what they're saying is, "I've done a great job, you just about made it, but I'm still am putting this placard that says it's an unreinforced masonry building." I mean, it's ridiculous. It's, you know, it's very reinforced. It just doesn't happen to be reinforced to the tune of ASCE 4117, which is the current standard for upgrade. So I think one thing that's kind of ridiculous about the placarding thing is the inappropriateness of some of the placard. I mean, that particular placard language to some buildings like my building. Now, I had another building, the Estelle Court Apartments, which was labeled a URM, and it wasn't a URM. We went in there and broke into the walls, and our engineer picked photos, and we brought the city people over. It took about 6 months to convince them. We managed to convince them it was a reinforced building. In fact, it was basically the brick was a facade on a wood frame building. So we got that one off the thing. We got a third building that's a 1910 garage, and it is a URM, but we've done a lot of things to it, and I don't think anybody's going to be scared away because their car is being parked in a dangerous building. Not to the extent they would be in terms of living and so on. So my basic testimony is the labeling needs to be accurate. And also, in the first place, the 1,650 buildings that were identified, that was done by rapid visual screening, which is a technique FEMA came up with to identify, just let me finish this, to identify approximately how many buildings in a city like Portland were URMs. It wasn't meant as a way to specifically pinpoint that a particular building was a URM. The whole notion is you drive by in the car and you look up and you see bolts coming out through the wall and you say, gee, that's probably looks like it's reinforced, or no, it doesn't look like it's reinforced. But it's a very inaccurate, although useful, tool.
Thank you, Walt. Appreciate it. Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. Since the gentleman mentioned it, I also wanted to have the city attorney put on record that there was a lawsuit filed against the city, and the judge has taken some short-term action, and so I just thought it would be appropriate to make sure that that was on the record.
I'm just aware of what I, you know, read in the newspaper or hear on television, so I don't feel comfortable making that representation.
Very good. Maybe we can get someone from the city attorney's office to come down and actually state what the current status is of that, because I think it's important.
Well, my understanding, Commissioner, is that Judge Acosta of the district court, of the federal district court, issued a 60-day temporary restraining order prohibiting the city from enforcing its code, and was based in part on the representation that the council was going to be taking up an amendment to the ordinance. And so the judge froze everything in place for 60 days, is my understanding.
Thank you. That was my understanding, too, but I just, as a non-lawyer, did not want to put what a lawyer said on the record. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next three, please, Carla.
Our Lightning Superhumanity, Angie Even, and Maggie, and they'll be followed by Edie Mondanai, Vic Savara, and Christy White.
All this talk about retrofitting. If you do tiny homes for supportive housing, you won't even have to have all this extra engineering for these earthquakes in the newly discovered seismic zone. You know, tiny little houses, they don't need
Maggie,
a lot of engineering reinforcement.
Excuse me one second. It won't be taken against your time, but we have 20 people who signed up.
I am talking about
not talking about the ordinance.
Reinforcement. Yes.
Do you support the ordinance or do you not support the ordinance?
I support housing that doesn't need seismic reinforcement. That's what I support in the future, that doesn't need all that money being spent on so much over-engineering. You know, maybe we should start building our buildings in more human proportion and a lot greener. And that's what I'm saying, you know, don't need elevators, don't need stairs, you need ramps and flat walkways. And let's build our buildings in human proportion.
Good afternoon, or good morning, sorry.
Hi.
Sorry, can Mayor.
I would like to lost our quorum.
I'm sorry, what happened?
We've lost our quorum.
Yeah, there's no quorum, and so I was concerned about that.
Yeah, yeah, 1 second, please. We'll wait for Commissioner Hurstie. Well, Nick, that's scintillating television.
Where's Eli when you need him?
I guess we should take a moment to acknowledge that people do watch this at home on Channel 30. And we get a lot of feedback from folks. Former Mayor Vera Katz used to watch Channel 30 religiously. Former State Senator Avell Gordley watches Channel 30. You're here most of the time, so you don't have to watch it on Channel 30.
What television do you watch? I got on KGW.
All right. Go ahead and continue.
Thank you. My name is Angie Even. I've lived in Portland my entire life. I've been a community leader in the Woodstock neighborhood for over 30 years, and I appreciate the time today. I brought a number. This number represents the number of days that I have personally tried to get you to listen to the mom and pops. This is the number that of days that I have personally watched these people be disrespected, ignored, and shut out. You've praised us for our respectful testimony in the past, and we've been mistreated over and over. And here we are again, another hearing, and there was no notification. If people are upset today, please understand that that is on you, not us. They're afraid, they're stressed, as everything they've worked for is being threatened. Placards are wrong. It's a false narrative, and it's fear-mongering. We have three commissioners that have came out in the press opposing the placards, so I'm not understanding why we're not here for a repeal. The title encumbrance that was tried to be enforced is absolutely outrageous. There is no trust left, none. Amit Kumar from BDS testified under oath in a deposition recently. In that deposition, he contradicted testimony that he gave to City Council more than one time that the list was accurate. This alone should nullify the votes and the resolution that was passed on June 13th. Mayor Wheeler, I've met with you four times. In those times, you told me you would only support parapets, cornices, and chimneys. That the UARM project was the worst half-baked policy you had ever seen, and it should have never came to City Council. You told me that you did not want to regulate people out of business. You told me that you would not go forward on anything until that list was addressed. And you asked me to trust you, and I'm still trying. To all of you, enough is enough. Stop the process and don't move forward until you make things right. We have 10,000 public record request emails that show the systemic bias and contempt during this entire project. The new committees are now
Angie, I'm going to need you to come to a conclusion.
892. Can I just finish my paper? I have that much. It's 12 font and it's double spaced.
Folks in the audience, if you disrupt the proceedings or disrupt people who are testifying, we're going to ask you to leave. Do you understand that? That's the rules. Thank you.
Okay. So I'm going to, people are upset. To all of you, please stop this process and make things right. In those public records requests, two things became very evident. One was staff deleted two other types of buildings out of this project to politically push forward the URMs in May of 2018. The other thing is that there are 1,500 individual condo units that were never notified. Those are sitting in the assessor's list. They are not on the URM list. They've sent one postcard to condo buildings, but neglected to send those to the others. And that's in an email from Shelley Hack saying that those buildings have... I can bring it to you. Sorry. Okay, sorry. Anyway, so just hear this. I'll just sum it up. You published an unverified list in 2016, and now you're being unjustly punitive. And if this is so doable and so easy, we might ask the city to just buy our buildings and make us whole. The people that own these buildings are the stewards of the city. We've lived here, we've worked here, we've worked hard, and we deserve the respect to be heard and for you to work with us, and I appreciate my time and the extra time.
Thank you. And Angie, I'd like to respond since you called me out by name.
Yeah, absolutely.
First of all, I have enjoyed our meetings, and I've appreciated them, and I did make that space to hear what were often alternative views to my own, but I wanted to hear that perspective. What we were discussing when we made those comments, that was relative to the original proposal, which, as I'm sure you'll recall, was requirements around seismic upgrades. We compromised once, which was the timeline on those seismic upgrades, and we concluded that that wasn't going to work and there wasn't support on the council for that to have happen. So what we went to instead was a public information and notification strategy. So I just want to be very clear that this has moved in large measure as a result of the community's input on this. And so where my colleagues, I think, are going with this now is to say, let's do a do-over, which is fine, and that's certainly their prerogative. I'm just saying we can't keep pretending that there isn't also, you know, I understand the risk to the building owners. I get that. It's been made crystal clear. But there is also a broader public health and safety question that we cannot ignore. And so from my perspective, it's not just about how do we honor and appreciate people who own buildings in this community, but how do we also respect and appreciate everybody else who is exposed to a verifiable, demonstrable public safety risk. And we heard our former fire chief come in and speak eloquently to that point. So there's a bit of a balancing act that has to go on here. I just want
you to understand that. Can I just respond respectfully?
Yeah,
and
sure.
That is that I think where the disconnect is, Mayor Wheeler, is that from the conversations that you have with the building owners to what comes out on the other side, everything else is done without any transparency within City Hall.
But we can disagree on that point.
Okay.
Thank you for your
Well,
testimony.
I don't think that these people disagree.
Okay, well, that's...
So when you say that we make...
Angie,
okay.
I understand.
Yeah,
I get your point. And I understand why you would say that on behalf of the building owners that you're here representing. I appreciate it. Thank you for your testimony.
Well, bottom up.
Good morning.
Bottom up, not top down, please.
Good morning.
Good morning. I may go over my 2 minutes. My name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Superhumanity. Again, on this original ordinance, I myself would just put it on the shelf and leave it there. Now, my biggest concern here is dealing with the insurance companies, keeping them aware. If we're talking about a safety issue, possibly work with the insurance companies to have more insurance on these buildings. I don't see any big concern on the tenants understanding what type of building you have there. Again, we're doing this futurist type look into the future and almost an Elon Musk type, let's go to Mars on this situation. You don't know when we're going to have that earthquake. You have no idea. You don't know when you upgrade these buildings up to the current seismic standards. These buildings could all fall to the ground then also. We need to just make people be aware, have adequate insurance, make the public be aware what the situation is. But this is going way over the line here. As far as on the placards, if you end up going that direction, that should be optional to the owners what they want to do. Again, my biggest concern also is on the marketability of these properties, which this is a big blemish on them. This is a big blemish from investors coming into the city and looking at this and going, I have no idea how much money I'm going to have to put into this building just on this issue. And this is a big concern. It's kind of like the stock market going up and down, this uncertainty. I don't know what I'm doing here. I don't know what I'm doing there. And values are going up and down, up and down. And it's interesting. Somebody said maybe the city should just buy all their buildings at fair market value, if not 25% higher on this issue. You willing to put up the money? You want to own the whole city? I look at this almost as a property grab against these owners. That's the way I'm seeing this. That's the way I'm viewing this. And if you're willing to put up the money, make them great offers right now. Because this is ridiculous. You are actually devaluing their properties unless you have this in line. Exactly what is to be expected, but not use this futurist idea. Look at it in the future. You don't have that ability any more than anyone else. And you are devaluing their properties at a fast rate because of this. Again, this ordinance should be put on the shelf. And my biggest concern, and I'm not quite
Thank
done.
You.
I'm not quite
well,
done.
Listen,
I'm going to take 10 more seconds.
If everybody
I
takes 4
sure,
minutes, we're not going to get through the whole list. I am going to cut you off. Your time is up. Your time is up.
Don't cut me off.
You are out of order. Next three people.
Next three are Ed Montanay.
Excuse me, your time is done. Your time is up.
This is about safety.
You're
don't
40
cut me
seconds
off when
over.
It comes to the safety of these people.
Ed Montanay. I'm sorry, E.D. Montanay, Vic Savara, and Christy White. They'll be followed by Pippa Aaron, Bill Eastman, and Mira McLaughlin.
Folks, I really want everybody to have an opportunity to testify. But excuse me, you are out of order. You are out of order.
You're out of order.
I'm going to have to ask you to leave.
Good. I'm glad
Goodbye. Thank you.
I'm glad to leave.
For the rest of you, if I want to make sure we have the opportunity for everybody to have a voice at the microphone. And if everybody goes on for 4 minutes, we're not going to have a quorum here, and we're going to have to stop testimony early. You know, apparently you don't agree with that because you're talking over everybody else. Goodbye. Thank you. E.B. Mondanay, thank you for honoring us with your presence today. It's good to see you. Thank you.
I'm glad I'm not the only one that has issues in my life.
Just another Wednesday, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I'm going to be quick, I hope. Repeal. I want to start with those three words. And I want to bring to the attention of this wonderful council. Good morning, y'all.
Good morning.
I've just completed a renovation of the pulpit that graces the top of Celebration Tabernacle at the tune of about $100,000. We all agree that we want a safe Portland. People have no place where there is no history. This action drives the nail in the coffin of gentrification, which of the African-American community. Which is a continued insult to our people and our legacy here. This continues to widen the gap of equity and inclusion in a state that was founded in white supremacy. I'm very concerned about the 1,600 or so buildings that have been listed, that they have been listed properly and appropriately in accordance to your own work. You have said that this was an ambiguous list at best. Anything this confusing and has as many rabbit holes as this resolution and this mandate, in my mind, just real simply needs to be stopped. I tend to lean towards scripture in cases where a resolve is necessary that men can't seem to get. And the word of God reminds us that in the principal thing for humans is to get wisdom and to be educated. But then in all of that getting, we need to get an understanding. I think it is incumbent of our city leaders to listen to the voices of our people and figure out why it's so important that this can't just be repealed and for all the voices to come to the table and have an equal say. Good morning.
Thank you, and perfect timing. Good morning.
Good morning. I feel lucky to be following you. I'm Christy White. I represent Al Solheim and his partners, who are owners of several URMs in Portland. Thanks for listening to the concerns. As you consider this pause, we'd like you to focus on a few points. You have a building code that's currently in effect, and under that adopted, effective, well-considered building code, you have triggers for when a building requires seismic upgrades. Those triggers are related to changes in occupancy, changes in occupant load, changes in hazard classification. If any of the URM buildings or any other buildings in town hit one of those triggers, the code requires the upgrade. That's fair. It's fair because the upgrades are required at a time when there is a quid pro quo, and the owner can likely finance the upgrade. You want higher occupancy or a more intense use, you can have it, but you must do the upgrades. All buildings are treated the same way in that regard. The placard program seems to dismiss the current building code and simply assumes that if you have not hit one of these triggers and therefore haven't upgraded your building lately, you're deemed unsafe. Well, instead, during this pause, we should decide whether the triggers in the current code are appropriate. And if they are not appropriate, what is appropriate, given the balance between safety, feasibility, and proportionality? If you are concerned that there's buildings out there that have hit the triggers but not completed the upgrades, spend our time enforcing the current code rather than throwing all the buildings into the same set of facts or same status. Second point. The process for determining whether a building is safe or unsafe under your placarding ordinance also seems flawed. The evidence offered, which you've heard today, stated that they were based only on external visual inspections. But you've also probably read the reports, as Commissioner Fish noted on the newspaper article, that there's URMs who have been fully upgraded into the standard in effect at the time, spent millions of dollars, and now are being required to declare themselves unsafe. And we know of one instance when a letter was sent to a URM owner who said they were in compliance, and that building was never touched for seismic upgrades. So, last sentence. Disparate enforcement undermines your own primary objective. A building upgraded safe, a building not upgraded unsafe. So we ask that these concerns at least get addressed during this fair pause and you engage more stakeholders. Thank you.
Ms. White, if I could jump in real quick. Number one, would you mind emailing your testimony to the council?
Sure.
Number two, are you considering volunteering for this new committee?
Yes.
Okay. And number three.
Is there a different answer that's possible right now? I don't
think so. Number
three.
No. Number three. Are you involved in the legal action?
No.
Okay, so that's Mr. DiLorenzo is the lawyer, along with others, on the legal action. You're here counseling us on what you think is good code and what the law currently provides and should provide.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Vic Savara, and I live in and I own a URM building. I was extremely thrilled when I heard that Commissioner Hardesty had put a repeal on this issue. And the reason I was so relieved was that the original committee under which all of these approvals had been, all these recommendations had been made, did not even contain one small owner-occupied person. Not even one. Okay? So from the beginning, this thing has been flawed. Okay? And because it has been flawed, we've been band-aiding things like, you know, like kicking the bucket down the road. So if we have a process which is not good, which has come out with something wrong, and we are and we have accepted that, because we have said that we want to come up with a new committee which contains representatives of 90% of the owners. Okay, I'm very encouraged by that. So I appeal to the council, okay, that instead of just kicking the bucket down the road and saying, hey, postpone it till next year, repeal it and then tell the committee, come up with something in 18 months which is a community thing, because as an owner, I am I love my tenants and I wouldn't want anything to happen to them too. So I want to be a part of the solution.
Commissioner Hardesty.
I thank all three of you for your testimony. So I'm curious. So putting a pause in place until November 2020 provides us the opportunity to talk to many more stakeholders, to put together the work group that the Bureau of Emergency Management is going to put in place, and to really ensure that we've identified some funding opportunities to assist these small business owners in doing the upgrades that we are requiring. So what's wrong with doing a pause until 2020? Because I think if we repealed it, quite frankly, there would be no incentive to do the work to get to something that makes sense. Because when it's gone, it's gone. And then it's like no rush. But if we put a date out in the future, like November 2020, and say, well, by then we're going to come back. And if we have to come back before that date with something that makes more sense. What's wrong with that?
Nothing wrong with that. Except what I see right now, that there's no date specified for the new committee to make a recommendation.
But they're actually, they're in the process now of recruiting for the new committee. Mm-hmm. And so, again, I mean, if we just repealed it today, right, then what's the pressure on the committee to actually get their work done in a timely fashion and bring it back for right. City Council
okay.
deliberation?
I just want to repeat again, I really appreciate your approach.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you so very much.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Reverend Montanay, did you want to respond to that?
A wonderful proposal in its decency that it's presented in. The language has to be very clear. And for me, it is a repeal, in a sense, because we're all interested in safe citizens. But the language has to be clear and very strong, and no placketing asserted for me to be quiet.
Reverend Monet, I never want you to be quiet. I want you to sing it to the top of
your
voice.
About this issue.
Yeah. let me just say that again. I mean, I'm pretty transparent. You know that, right?
Yes.
And so my goal is to get us to a result that more people will support. I don't imagine we will come back with something that everybody will think, well, wow, this is like the